Spaulding, this calls for the old Billy Baru. Billy. Whoa, Billy. This is a biggie.
In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of the Conquer Golf Podcast. This is Brian Thompson. I'm here with Kevin Noto, as usual, and we're very excited for the new year in golf. I've got kind of a lot to talk about in our first episode of the season. Obviously, we've got things happening at Kapalua this week. All the champions from last year teeing off a little bit later today, and then there's been a couple other interesting things in golf with new rules. We've got some new club deals, namely with Justin Rose. So, it should be a good episode. Kevin, what are sort of some of your initial thoughts heading into 2019? Albeit whether it's the tournament this week or some of the other news. It's been a little while since we've gotten together.
Yeah. Me and you are diehard Tiger fans. I'm hoping he can keep the momentum. Not that the match mattered at all, but
that's right.
That didn't look good. He didn't look good in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
I just hope he doesn't deteriorate, and I hope he keeps that form that he had through the middle and late last year.
Yeah.
And keeps it going. I'm sure he will, but he started getting wayward with the driver again in the Bahamas and looked like he was doing that stuck underneath flip thing and like just things that I don't like to see. And then the other thing that shocked me, I was looking at the tee times this morning and I mean, I knew that this was the case, but Jordan Spieth missing from Tournament of Champions, like, you know, I picture him winning. I was like, oh, who am I going to pick to win this week? And I was just like, man, Spieth's not there to pick. So,
that's a good strange point. I didn't even really think about that.
But, yeah. I just assumed he'd win a tournament every year for the next 20 years.
Well, it's funny because there's a lot of guys that are on the list that you like wouldn't necessarily would be there. I mean, I'm looking at like Andrew Landry and Andrew Putnam. And
we ended some of the biggest winless streaks ever, right? This last year.
That was
Charles Howell, Brooks, or Keegan Bradley, Paul Casey won after not winning in the last decade.
Not to mention Tiger.
Tiger, yeah, extremely long, but
Ted
it was
Potter.
A strange year. Ted Potter.
Yeah. Pierce is in there.
I think he won.
Yeah, what did he win?
I think him and
The New Orleans event?
Won a team shootout or something. I think it was him and... Who's the guy that... He won a FedEx Cup. Putts with the...
Oh, Horschel?
Yeah, him and Horschel, I think, won some. So.
Got it.
I think Horschel might have won on his own separately after that, too. But
it's possible.
Yeah.
Should be good.
Yeah. So, let's get into Kapalua.
Yeah, you gotta kind of like DJ, right? He's like, won there last year.
I saw this stat. That was his last like 51 rounds or something strange. Can't be 51 rounds. That would mean he'd been there for like 12 years, right? That can't be.
No, it's possible. He started winning in like 2007. Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
That was
nuts.
Yeah, like that was 12 years ago. It's outrageous.
Maybe. I don't know. All I know is maybe it was like 41 or something, but he hasn't shot over par in his last like basically 10 full tournaments at this course. And he's like 154 under par throughout that stretch. So
that's good golf.
He hasn't shot over par in 10 years at this course, essentially. Over 10 years.
Wow.
I don't know why it suits him so much.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. And then Spieth was kind of a dominator of this course for a little bit. So, I don't know.
JT's up there now. He won this tournament, didn't he, once?
I want to say he's won this tournament. Yeah.
Pretty sure he has. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. Oh, Jason Day is in the field. Did he win like Farmers last year or something?
I want to say Jason Day might have won a couple times.
Did he? That's good.
I think so.
I hope he has kind of a bounce back year. I feel like he certainly still very relevant, but like since Tiger came back and there's like a lot of other players that are up there, namely JT, DJ, John Rahm's kind of made a bit of noise.
John Rahm's but like top seven in the world or something.
Yeah. It's
crazy. But I get what you're saying. And he just looks so fragile to me always. For someone who's big and in shape and like strong, he's always like gingerly walking around. I'm like, I don't know. But I heard last year they were interviewing him and he's very into like the technicals and all the fitness stuff. And basically they said for his optimal performance, he needed to like lose mass is what him and his trainer decided. So I'm hoping he actually did that because I do think there's a point of definitely diminishing returns, but a point of like too big where you start making yourself injury prone.
Yeah.
So, and I have nothing to back that up other than just from, I don't know, just looking at stuff.
Personal
you know?
Experience when you've gotten too
jacked
up.
Yeah, when I'm huge. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. It kind of happened with Tiger, you know? Back in, like, when he was all wiry and stuff, he looked invincible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. All right, so this week, one of the things that's also different is the new rules. Mm. So I want to know, what is the over-under on how many times a player this week does the wrong ruling, essentially?
And that
a bad drop or...
Well, because it's not a penalty to drop from shoulder high.
Only a penalty if you play it after you drop from shoulder high.
What?
Yeah.
So you have to drop from knee high?
Yes, you do have to drop from knee high. Yeah, that's a thing.
That's strange to me.
So the reason they're doing that is because they want to minimize the amount of
bounce
on the ball because you no longer get the... So like before, if you took an unplayable and you dropped within two club lengths from your unplayable position, the ball could roll up to two club lengths outside of that two club lengths. And so you could conceivably be four club lengths away from where your ball originally lies.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't count anymore. Like, as I understand it, you have to be inside that two club lengths. So they're trying to minimize the number of redrops by bringing it lower to the ground. And I guess when they were proposing the rule, they were suggesting that you could drop from any height.
Yeah, 1 inch was
like
the
one
original
inch, but
thing.
Then they were like, well, it might be kind of confusing. Like, was that actually a drop or was it a place? Like, at what point is that like thing? So they're like, okay, knee height and like...
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but it's a one-stroke penalty if you drop from shoulder height and you play it.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I just assumed it was you could drop as low as it. That might happen. I think they'll redo it.
Yeah, you would think.
Because they got two eyes on it. So the caddy and player would have to mess up.
Yeah.
Is that for everything? Even like relief from cart path
yes.
and stuff?
Everything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How
many people are going to throw out their back trying to drop from knee height this year? That's what I want to know.
One, John Daly.
Oh, jeez.
What else we got? Double hit, no penalty.
Yeah. So that was actually an interesting one. So when I was a kid, I used to think that like, if the double hit wasn't a penalty, I would just like juggle the golf ball into the hole. Like, and now I'm like, it's not a penalty. So like, what's to stop me from just like scooping it up and like walking it down, like bouncing it like 500 times on the way to the par 5 green and acing the hole?
I mean, that's pretty smart, but. I mean, attempt to hit a ball, right?
I mean, I'm hitting it.
I know, but you're attempting to hit it multiple times.
Ah, that's a good point.
Versus making one strike.
Ah, yeah. So the intent is the key factor.
I would assume.
You should be a rules guy. You know that? That's pretty sharp.
That could be my calling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only fair weather. Like, whenever I watch those tournaments and it's like howling wind or rainy and like, I'm like, the rules officials probably have it the worst of everyone.
Yeah,
they don't get to walk around.
No, they just stand there and, yeah.
Yeah, they just stand there for both, like, the morning wave and afternoon wave and just get pummeled. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Free embedded ball, free relief anywhere through the course.
Yeah.
Not in bunkers. Not in hazards. That's how it's worded on here.
Oh, wait. It can't be.
It cannot be. Embedded ball, free relief anywhere through the course?
Yeah, that can't be true of bunkers.
I know. It would take away, like, an extremely important part of golf, which is, I know that sounds strange, but, like, egging in bunkers is just as old as time. It needs to still happen. But...
yeah, no, that can't be true.
How is this a rule change? When were you not allowed?
I think it was, like, a local rule before, and it was only... Oh, okay. And so now it's, like, an official thing. Okay. Like, yes, it just is always in play.
Because I'm like, I can't remember a time I've had an embedded ball where they forced me to play. I mean, no.
Never. No, never. Okay. I agree. I don't think that's a major one.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's no penalty for removing loose impediments in a bunker.
Yeah.
Or for touching the sand with a hand or club.
Or in a hazard.
Yeah, so you can ground your club now, apparently.
Yeah, you can ground it. I don't think you can clear the alleyway.
No. I'm sorry. I misspoke. It says, at least this Sky Sports article that I'm reading says, a limited set of restrictions, such as not grounding the club right next to the ball, is kept to preserve the challenge of playing from the sand. However, an extra relief option is added for an unplayable ball in a bunker, allowing the ball to be played from outside the bunker with a two-stroke penalty. Okay, interesting.
Touching sand in bunker, incidentally, is now permitted.
Yeah, incidentally.
But I think you can ground your club in a hazard. So what they're calling bunkers and hazards different things now, to clarify the rules.
Yes, I think this is true.
Because I think if you're actually in, like, a water hazard, you could put your club on the water.
And actually, there is no such thing anymore as a water hazard.
No, correct. What are they called?
Penalty areas.
Penalty areas. So,
is it me, or is this, like, the most rule changes that we've ever had?
That I've ever seen.
I feel like we're playing a different game now. It's, like, a completely different set of rules.
I agree. Pretty soon we're going to be dialing back equipment. Don't you feel like that's the next step, or no?
That would be really interesting.
I think I want steel shaft only.
Ooh, wow. That would never happen.
I know.
That would never happen.
We lose too much money, the equipment companies. And
True Temper would love that, though.
Yeah, I know.
Dynamic holds would be.
Yeah, X100s only. Yeah. I think I just, that's just always been my thing. It's like.
I played a steel shafted driver in college for a while. It was pretty good. I thought I was really cool because it was like, I was like Tiger.
Yeah, you're the only one.
Yeah.
No one else did it.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I just, to hit it far, you actually have to swing hard.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
And try to swing hard.
But now I'm an old man. I would hate that. That sucks. We didn't even talk about, like, probably the rule that will come into play the most often. Which is the flag stick.
There's two that I think will come. But yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, he's talked about it. He's like, I think he thinks most situations it's advantageous to leave the flag in, right?
Yeah, so it's interesting because when they created this rule, the idea was that, okay, well, if you're far away from the hole, you can leave the flag stick in, basically. Like, you have the option. And that would theoretically speed up play because you wouldn't have to go up and grab the flag and then come back to your ball and, you know, go back and forth tending it or something.
Tending, yeah.
Right. And then I played on New Year's Day with some buddies, and we were kind of talking about some of these rules, and, like, we were joking. Like, everybody today just plays with the flag out, right, when they're, like, inside 30 feet. You know, you just take it out because you've always had to have it out. But then, like, people like Bryson DeChambeau, who think there's, like, some benefit to having it in, like, now there's going to be people that are like, oh, no, I'm sorry, please put the flag back in for me. And, like, I wonder how much that's going to, like, actually delay the game on the other side that we didn't necessarily think about.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
Like.
Yeah, because it was clearly invented for tending and tap-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the extremes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm so far away or I'm so close. Why are you making me, like, take out the flag, set it down because I can't be holding it, or that's a penalty?
Yeah.
But, yeah, the people who want to play, like, musical flags, right?
Like, yeah.
I want it in. I want it out. I want it in.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, think about the guy who's like putting from the back of the 12th green at Augusta. And he's like putting down towards the water. He's like, no, please put it in.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that's going to keep me from not getting this ball wet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. But yeah, I also thought it was interesting. I mean, Bryson said he like depending on the flag stick. So I think at regular tour events that have like the fiberglass flag sticks, I think he said he's going to keep it in. But at like the US Open, when they have like the wooden ones that are a little bit sturdier.
Yeah.
That he's going to take it out. I don't know. He's more of a scientist than I am, but I just my thing with the flagstick, I have this like really high propensity to just get it out. I just assume that if I want to put something in a jar, I'm not going to like stuff other stuff inside of it in advance. I'm going to like, you know, make all the room in there that I can so that I can make more room for the ball.
The only factor would be is if you don't think you'll have a good ability to judge speed, right?
Never felt that
but
way.
But like, how far do you got to be away? Or how extreme does the slope have to be? Like, because he said this too, and I don't understand it really. I don't understand how it increases your chances. If your ball's going to roll by 3 feet, would you lip in more somehow
you'd have to be hitting it like dead on too, and I just feel like that's
I don't know, it's interesting, and I don't know if it matters that much. Like a putt's probably gonna go in no matter what, but I don't know, maybe he's gonna change his margin of error. Like, he knows that on breakers with the pin in, he can lip in from the high side more, and he'll aim like an extra eighth of an inch high, because he's crazy enough to do something like that, you know.
An eighth of an inch
high. Where he knows like a high side lip in is like 4% more likely to go in if there's a flag because of the way it rotates around the cup or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe that's crazy. The other one I thought would actually affect people, the alignment. Did you see that one?
Yeah, where you're not allowed to like
caddy assisting with alignment is now not permitted.
I mean, the LPGA, that would be a game changer.
LPGA, it's 80%.
Yeah,
I'd say.
I've always found that to be very interesting. That like such a high percentage of the women on the tour, like
women versus men.
Yeah, and I like hate to like introduce the sort of sexist thing, but like it's just a fact. It's just like so much more common on the women's tour than it is on the men's tour. It's like,
yeah, that's not anything.
No, it's fact. But it has to be something to do with some mindset difference or something. I don't know. It's interesting. But yeah.
Men that do it, I think J.B. Holmes does it.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because as I was thinking about it, I couldn't think of a single man that
J.B. Holmes for sure does it.
I don't know
who else, but yeah, but the women's game, that changes. That's a lot.
I think it's gotten a little bit better, I think, in the recent years. I know that, like, Lynn Marriott and Pia Nielsen, the Vision 54 women, they coach a lot of LPGA players, and they're definitely
against
big opponents of having your caddy line you up. They're not in favor of that at all. I agree with them. I think it just kind of takes you out of the flow and like being more present with the shot if you're like waiting for your caddy to line you up. So I think that's definitely a win for the game. That like, one, it should speed things up fractionally, but also just like get people actually playing the game more and not relying on somebody else to play it for them.
Yeah. What about, not that this will ever change, but are you a fan of lining up a line on your ball?
So it's funny. A lot of people ask me about that, especially when I was teaching more, and like people would like ask me how I do that. And I think there was a time when I've drawn lines on my ball. Usually that's what I do. If I have a line on my ball, that probably means I hit a provisional at some point, because that means like I probably had a few dots. Like usually I have two dots on either side of my ball, and I usually like dot a handful of them before the round. And so usually the only way a line would show up on my ball is if I like thought I hit one out of bounds or lost or something, and I pulled the next one out of my bag for provisional, and I realized it had the same markings as the one I had. So if you see a line on my ball, it probably means I lost the ball at some point. But I just use kind of the logo of the ball, whatever the the model usually is, kind of in a straight line there. I usually use that, not as like gospel. I think that's where a lot of people get like kind of thrown off, is that they, you know, and then they get stuck in there and they've got to get it just and like that kind of drives me crazy. But I do think it's a useful frame of reference, right? That like, okay, I think this putt is two cups out on the right, and so I'll line up my ball two cups out on the right. And then when I get over it, if I feel like it's three cups out, I just know that relative to how my ball is lined up, I can go a little bit higher than that, basically, right? And it's more just like a frame of reference rather than like a...
Yeah.
And that's been pretty useful for me. I mean, it seems to work for me. Not too bad.
That makes sense. I mean, that's what Tiger does. I think I listened to him once and he was saying he lines it up, but like if it's left edge... And he goes and he puts the ball down really quick. And he tries to put it down as close to left edge. And then he gets back behind me and he's like, oh, I put it out a little outside of left edge.
Yeah.
Now I know when I go aim my putter, I just...
Yeah, you just do a little bit less than that.
I should aim a hair right of that.
Line. Right.
And like, so that's how he does it too, I think. At least he used to.
Yeah.
So that seems like a good, healthy way. I've seen people, and this is very strange, that put the line... parallel to their club face. Have you ever met anyone that does that?
Parallel. Oh,
so instead of lining up the line at the hole, they line it up
perpendicular to their
target. Yeah, so that they'd want to match their club face to the line of the line and make parallel lines. It was
that seemed really
someone
hard.
Someone told me they did that, and I'm like, that's a disaster waiting to happen. I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. I don't. I definitely don't do that.
Yeah. I've always just wished balls came completely unmarked, unlogoed. Like, I like to look at white. I've never...
Man, what if that was a thing? What if they just, like...
A white ball?
Just a pure... And just
whatever you want to mark with? I know. Yeah. It would take a company being, like, secure enough to, like, not have to stamp their crap all over it, right?
Yeah.
Like...
It'd be a lot easier to get fooled with, like, the exploding golf ball, though. Could you imagine that if they're, like...
One out of every dozen?
Yeah, or like there was, like... There was like, if they moved to a one ball rule on the tour where it was like only allowed to, like, not one, they do have a one ball rule, but like a rule.
One
where
ball to rule them all?
Yes, exactly. Well, exactly, right? And then like Tiger was on the first tee at Augusta with like Jordan Spieth, and he just like, oh yeah, here's one or whatever, and like it was an exploding one.
That would be, that'd be pretty good.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Or like a limited distance ball.
What's the
Tiger smokes it off first tee, it goes 268.
Like a Cayman ball that goes like,
yeah, just nuclear
40 yards.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly.
Oh man. Anyways, that would be funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always wanted a white ball. The only company that could have done it was Callaway because they have their hexagon dimples, and I'm like, I would know a Callaway ball from anywhere because like they're the only company that has a hexagon dimple. So.
Yeah, but then the Bridgestones, they've got like those shallow dimples, right?
They have a strange one. I mean, Nike and Bridgestone used to be identical. You couldn't. Now that Nike's dead,
it's the same. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think, Bridgestones are pretty identifiable.
Yeah.
Their dimple pattern. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know. No one will ever do it. So, but those pros, I'm surprised no pros asked for it.
Yeah.
I would assume Tyler's. Justin Thomas really wanted it.
It's probably in their contract. They got to show the logo or something.
I know.
Yeah. It's all a big marketing game.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd... Yeah. I don't know.
Speaking of marketing games.
Yeah.
Biggest equipment deal that happened, I think far and away, I don't even know of any others off the top of my head, but Justin Rose is now playing Honma golf clubs, which, as I understand it, and you might know more about this than I, Kev, but like, in the States, Honma's kind of like has been a little bit of a joke, I think, of the equipment. Mm-hmm. But like, I know overseas it's really big.
Yeah.
Especially obviously in like Japan and China, even probably is really big. Mm-hmm. The clubs look good, but I always have suspicions of players that switch. Not suspicions. I mean, it's very clear. Like, he's probably getting paid a bajillion dollars to play these clubs. Mm-hmm. And he's probably like, yeah, he's certainly tried them and they feel good to him. But like, You know, it's just like when Rory switched equipment. You know, it didn't go so well for him at first. It took him a while to get comfortable with the new switch.
Yeah.
Tiger took forever to change equipment. Like, you know, when he was switching from Titleist to Nike in like the 99, 2000 range, like it was a slow, gradual process.
I mean, even Bubba went to Volvic Golf
Balls. Oh, that was...
It was almost terrible. Lost his card. And then last year he goes back and wins three times.
Yeah.
So it's like... I don't know how much of it's mental, to be honest with you. Because, like... But these guys get used to what they're used to, and they like looking down on it. And whether they have the mental edge or something, but... Yeah, they don't mess around with equipment, or they shouldn't, you know? Like, they're playing for so much money nowadays that, like...
Yeah.
If you're not 100% confident in what you're using, I don't understand these changes. But I will say irons, to me, are different. Like...
Don't tell Tommy Fleetwood that.
Why?
I don't know how you're saying they're different, but Tommy Fleetwood's he and Paul Casey had this deal with the VR iron, the Nike VR irons that he ran out of. He was down to his last set, and they were like all worn out, and he couldn't get any more, and he was like all bummed because, you know, he was basically done with his babies, and Paul Casey had an extra set in reserve, I guess, and
was
Tommy Fleetwood a bunch of flack about it.
Yeah, when I say the same, I do kind of mean the opposite of that, like. Like, yes, certain irons look better than others, but, like, if you're Justin Rose and you can have Honma make any head shape, any prototype that you want, like, you could get as close as you want to the look. And as far as the feel goes, like, the middle of the face for Justin Rose that he hits 99% of the time probably feels very similar on all the, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't... But drivers and stuff I get, but irons, I'm like, man, you can tell them to make any shape you want. Yeah,
pretty primitive, you'd think, right? Like,
just you use blades, and the majority of blades look similar.
Yeah.
But
I can't get over this. I'm looking at this picture of Justin Rose with this bag, and, I mean, he looks fine and everything, and I'm just looking at his bag, and clearly, I mean, he's subscribing to the Club Pro guy, 747 swing thought method, which is amazing. You know, and sometimes his routine, pre-shot routine, it looks like there are, 7-4-7 swing thoughts, you know? There's a few things. I mean, he does it very well. It's impressive. I can't imagine that they... I mean, that's amazing. I just can't say enough about that. But then the other thing, I'm looking at his bag, I assume that's his name, but it's in Japanese. I think that's Japanese.
That's pretty cool.
Must be.
I mean, they should write in English, but like...
I mean, yeah.
Like, I get it if they want some Japanese writing. Clearly, they're going after a certain market. So, Honma in Japan is like the club brand. There's sets of irons that cost like 12 grand of Honmas. At least when I was selling golf clubs, 8-9 years ago now? So
that's crazy.
And they have like five, back then they had like five different stages, like stage one, stage two, and if you owned stage five, it was like what CEOs of companies had, like even ones that had never golfed, I heard they would keep them in their office just to like impress people. Like they'd have their Honma staff bag with like all the clubs, even if they never, ever golfed. But it was like, it's a status symbol. And the drivers are whatever. They're not any better. They just are luxurious.
Yeah, so this article speaks to your point that I'm reading with Justin Rose. It says some full sets in the past have gone for as much as $75,000.
Yeah.
Could you imagine $75,000 for a set of golf clubs?
It's nuts. And I mean, they had like, when I was hearing about them, they'd have like a solid gold like weight somewhere in the back or something, you know? Like, in the end, it's just, this is stamped with their level 5 or 5-star or 5-diamond set or whatever it is. And, like, that's what made it so expensive is, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny. But I think they're okay clubs from everything I've heard.
I mean, they must be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting. I think... I can't imagine Justin Rose will have as good of a year this year as he had last year when he's switching equipment like this. Like, nothing to speak poorly on Hon McLaughlin. I'm sure they're probably really, really good. But just adjusting to new sticks like that, I don't remember a time when somebody adjusted to new equipment and, like, had a seamless transition, really.
So you were saying that he's going to play TaylorMade Fairway Woods. What about putter?
So let's see. It will likely consist of the company's driver, basically four through wedges.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say like what, it says he's probably just going to maintain the TaylorMade stuff he has with the ball, putter, and fairway metal.
And I think Honma makes balls. I don't know if they're like good. I don't even know if they try to make good ones. So it makes sense he'd stick with TaylorMade too.
I wonder if they come from the same factory that like the Bice balls come from.
The Honma ones? They just stamp their own name on it?
Stamp their own name on it.
Probably.
I don't know. I'm totally speculating.
They might be worse. I want to say they're like Dunlop quality, like bad. Like, ooh. They don't even try to make good balls. Like Ben Hogan golf balls, they at least like tried to be good for a while, but these ones are just bad.
These are just bad. Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Two more things we'll wrap up. One thing I wanted to add in that we didn't really plan on talking about, but I came across it here by the wonders of the internet. And I know we exchanged notes about it last night. This video of Vijay Singh and his workout routine, this is like amazing. Like just changing the senior tour the same way that Tiger changed the PGA Tour. Like,
yeah.
It's like some of the most intense stuff, like slamming his, like, and hammer into the side of a tire, like throwing tires, like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah, it's like a Navy SEAL workout.
Yeah,
it's impressive.
Yeah.
How old is Vijay?
55.
Yeah. I mean, he's been hammering golf balls for a long time.
This hurricane ball that he's, this thing is like,
it's like a,
oh, God.
I mean,
how is he not like breaking his club when he slams it into? I actually don't know what benefit he would get out of slamming his club into the side of a tire.
Tire?
It seems.
I don't know, because he's not using it as like an impact bag where you're like working. It's like being accelerating through impact.
Yeah.
To not let it stop. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm curious if this helps him perform better.
Yeah.
Right? Do you think he hits it further?
Yes. So I think that I might be overstating this, but I think a lot of fitness routines, like there's a lot of people that are really into like the specific exercises and golf specific things, and like there's certainly some things that you can do that are better than others for training your body to play golf. I'm not going to say that there's not, but like just the fact that he's like doing something is probably like the most beneficial thing. Like,
yeah,
it's like way better than doing nothing.
Yeah.
As far as he, or as long as he doesn't get injured, right? Which is maybe a little bit questionable with some of the things that I'm seeing in here, especially like taking full swings at a tire.
Wrist injuries.
Yeah, I mean, or just like breaking the club and like having it like snap off and like stab himself. I don't know. That seems like a reasonable possibility. But yeah, it's interesting. I think, clearly the game has changed and there's people really getting after it in the gym, which is cool. I mean, especially him, this 55-year-old guy, like, I don't know, maybe he's making a run at Tiger this year. He's like, if Tiger can come back, I can come back.
Yeah, maybe. Well, and maybe it's just mental confidence, too. Like, feel good, play good kind of a thing. Like, you feel confident, you feel more macho. I don't know what that does, but
just maybe carry yourself a little bit differently. I agree.
You just feel better. So maybe there's something to that, too. But
All right. Let's wrap it up. Let's talk
bold predictions.
Bold predictions for 2019.
Jordan Spieth win 3 times.
That's pretty bold prediction. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that's a good one.
He went goose last year, so.
So in order for him to do that, I think the putting has got to turn around. So that's basically what you're predicting. Is that his putting?
He was one of the best ball strikers last year, and I feel like there's a couple grinders out there. Like, not grinders like people who try to make cuts, but people who care and like have never given up on a round in their whole lives. Like Tiger, I picture Spieth being like that, like fighting to make cuts or just fighting to like, I don't know, always shoot his best round. And I don't know, it piled up on him last year, but this year he's breaking through a couple times. I mean, he's probably my favorite to win Augusta.
Yeah. Really? Jordan Spieth is your favorite to win Augusta?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty bold prediction too, I think. I know he's had great success there.
I mean, yeah, he's played Augusta better than anyone in the last 4 years. Even if he's not in form coming in there.
Yeah, I guess even last year he wasn't like in form and he came like second or third or something, right?
Yeah. Third.
Yeah.
And like made a run at him on Sunday.
Yeah, he did. He did. Okay. I guess that's not that bold, but
yeah. Three times is...
I just feel like he's like not one of the five players that I expect to like win anymore. You know, like he was for a while and now he's...
Well, the putter was the equalizer, right?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do anything else that's like... I mean, he has a great short game, but nothing else like knocks your socks off. But he's a really good iron player. And I think last year, throughout the whole year, he solidified that. So...
Yeah.
He can't like overpower courses or just...
Yeah.
Go into blitz mode like these other guys.
All right, bold prediction 2019 for me. It's gonna be tough for me to write up three wins for Jordan Spieth. I mean, is it cliche if I say Tiger's gonna win a major this year? Is that bold or is that not bold?
It's bold. I mean, do you think Pebble Beach favors him now?
Yes.
Like still?
Yes. Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it does. He doesn't have to hit that many drivers.
Mm-hmm. Which, even if he's driving it better, he's still not.
Yeah, I mean, like East Lake, he was driving it pretty damn well, I thought. Yeah, but I would say...
You think pulling Pebble, the greens are good for him, huh?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I also think Bethpage is a great venue for him. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't talking about PGA at Bethpage. He's won there before, like... Solid venue, like that's a solid iron players golf course right there, for sure. And then obviously Augusta. And then I don't know much about Royal Portrush where they're having the Open Championship, but like
whatever. The Open Championship,
that's like everybody now that says that's his best chance, right? Like,
yeah, where he could just mentally will a win, you know?
All right, so my bold prediction isn't that he's going to win one. My bold prediction is he's going to win two.
Two.
That's bold. That's pretty bold. I think that's bold.
That's very bold.
And I would could you imagine if he won like the first two?
Oh, Tiger. Right, we're talking about Grand Slam?
Yeah.
It'd be an actual Grand Slam.
It would be
nuts.
Yeah. That'd be so good. That'd be amazing for golf if that happened. I hope that happens. That would be awesome.
I was hoping your bold prediction was gonna be Sergio beats Tiger in a playoff at Bethpage.
Oh my gosh. No.
Wasn't that like where not it began, but like one of their original wars, right?
Yeah, no, there, for sure.
And then the New York fans hated Sergio.
Yeah, right? And the rain.
He was doing his
regret. Yeah, oh my gosh. Hit the ball, Sergio.
Yeah, that was that. Yeah, that was one of the best.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and then he like flipped him off too, right?
Yeah.
That was pretty intense.
It was like when US started hating, or US fans tend to start hating Sergio, at least some.
So. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Two wins in majors for Tiger. Three wins for Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, yours is way bolder than mine. No.
Yeah, I know. I also I'm being a Tiger homer. That's fine. All right. Well, it was a good start to the season. Hope everybody enjoyed
picks,
that.
Picks.
Oh, picks. Picks. Dang it. I almost forgot, Kev. all right. My dead last pick. I'm going to go real quick here. I'm picking... Patrick Reed.
Oh,
dead
my.
Last this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. Yeah. I'm picking. I didn't expect that. It flustered me. Patton Kizzire. You're dead last, buddy.
All right. And then my first pick. I'm gonna go with I'm gonna pick Cameron Champ.
Nice. I like it. I'm gonna pick Matt Kuchar. Very Ooh. Strange, but
Matt Kuchar. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I just feel like he's gonna win one. Another before we sign off, Xander Schauffele, top 10 in the world.
He is top 10 in the world now, or
he's number 10 from wow. what I saw.
Good for him.
So pretty cool.
That makes me feel like what, number 11.
Four years ago?
Three.
3 years
well,
ago?
Well, yeah, it's like three and a half, basically. Yeah. But yeah.
3.5 years ago.
He was winning the Northern California Open.
The NorCal Open.
That's insane.
By a couple.
Nice. Now, 10 in the world.
10 in the world.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So pretty cool stuff.
You and I are sitting here in San Francisco.
Talking about
how cool
VJ
he is.
VJ Singh's workouts.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, all right, wait. So who did you say was going to win? You said Matt Kuchar, and your last place was who? Patton Kizzire?
Yeah.
You picked Patton last time and finished last. Some other
did
tournament.
I?
Yeah, that's fine. You can do that.
It's a reset of the year.
It is a reset. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
See ya.
Sitting here in front of you guys talking, just hanging out here.